I'm Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Dan Friedel.
And I'm Katie Weaver. This program is aimed at English learners. So we speak slowly, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Today on the program, we cover a wide range of topics. We have stories about electric vehicles, undersea life, grammar, and arts and culture. We even have a conversation about our pets. So, if you like hearing about funny animals, be sure to listen to the entire podcast. Brian Lynn brings us the first story about the work automakers are doing to create electric vehicles that are less dependent on rare earth minerals. Then, if you like learning about the world under our seas and oceans, be sure to listen to my story about an area in the Gulf of Mexico that is home to mountains of colorful coral. Next, Faith Perlow is here with tips about how to use adjectives the right way when talking about pets. Be sure to listen to my conversation with Faith about our pets. You may hear about a funny dog and a fat guinea pig. Finally, Katie Weaver tells us about civil rights leader Ruby Bridges and tennis star Serena Williams. They are two of the newest members of the National Women's Hall of Fame. Now, here's Brian Lynn.
Major automakers are seeking new ways to make electric vehicle EV motors that depend less on rare earth minerals. China controls most mining and processing of a group of 17 metals known as rare earths. These minerals are used to produce permanent magnets. Many experts consider permanent magnets to be the most effective way to power EVs. But new motor designs show that permanent magnets are not necessary to produce a commercially successful EV. And some Western EV makers are finding new solutions to produce motors that avoid rare earth minerals. EV market leader Tesla announced earlier this year it planned to remove rare earths from its next generation EVs. Other automakers are also in the process of researching or developing EV motors that use little or no rare earth minerals. These include General Motors, Jaguar Land Rover, and BMW. Nissan says it plans to develop newer motors with low rare earth content, as well as permanent magnet motors that will one day no longer need the minerals. German technology supplier ZF has developed a new kind of motor the company says is very similar to the size and performance of permanent magnet motors. This kind of motor, known as EESM, uses electricity to produce a magnetic field. ZF's chief technology officer, Otmar Scharrer, told Reuters news agency, "Such development is an important contribution to making us a little more independent of China." ZF is in talks with U.S., European, and Chinese automakers to supply the motor and could start producing EV models within 2 years, Scharer said. Besides being mostly controlled by China, some rare earth development produces poisonous waste that can harm people and the environment. The problem could also be helped by using motors that do not depend on rare earth minerals. If you get it right, you've got a much more sustainable product, said Ben Chiswick. He directs engineering business development for Detroit-based Drive System Design. The company is working to create rare earth-free motors with three different automakers. Some companies, like BMW, say they have already made great progress after years of research. It was not a home run, but it works very well without rare earths, said Uwe Deuke of BMW's latest development efforts. He leads engineering efforts for the company's EESM motor planned for its next generation EVs. I'm Brian Lynn.
The U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, says changes in ocean temperature are the leading cause of coral bleaching around the world. From Australia's Great Barrier Reef to the waters of Florida, it happens when warm water causes corals to expel their colorful algae and turn white. Derek Manzello is the head of Coral Reef Watch, which is part of NOAA. He said at least 35 countries and territories across five oceans and seas reported coral bleaching. He said that by the year 2040, all of the world's coral will suffer from bleaching if water temperatures do not cool. He said coral needs extended periods of cooler water to recover from bleaching. If the water does not cool, he said, the corals aren't going to have a chance to recover. But in the Gulf of Mexico, about 160 kilometers south of Galveston, Texas, a large coral reef is still doing well. The reef is part of the Flower Garden Banks National Marine Sanctuary. The reef formation covers over 400 square kilometers. It started with just two reef areas called banks in 1992. It now has 17 banks. It is described as undersea mountains of yellow, orange, and pink coral as far as the eye can see. Michelle Johnston oversees the protected marine area for the federal government. She said, seeing that much coral in one place is magnificent and rare. Johnston said fishermen used to tell the story of a colorful area in the Gulf of Mexico, far from shore, 100 years ago. But scientists were uncertain that a coral reef could exist in such deep water. When divers finally reached the reef in the 1960s, they were surprised to find marine life. Johnston said the plants and animals do so well because the reef formed on top of mountain-like salt domes, high enough to catch sunlight. During the recent summer of record-breaking heat, Johnston said, the reef did experience some bleaching, but nothing as serious as in other parts of the world. But that does not mean the reef in the Gulf of Mexico is not vulnerable to climate change. She is concerned about the area getting too hot and the coral dying off. Officials who watch over Flower Garden Banks say the reef has suffered more serious bleaching in the past, but its depth and health helped it recover. The reef is deeper, 18 meters, than many others that are often just offshore. Andy Lewis of Houston, Texas, first saw the reef about 10 years ago. He loved it so much that he became an expert diver and started a company that leads dives to flower garden banks. "It's just a real adventure," he said. Scientists are working to help the reefs stay healthy. For example, boats are not permitted to anchor themselves to the reefs. They must connect to special floating cables to stay in one place. Other workers help remove invasive fish and creatures from the area. Kelly Drinnen is an education and outreach specialist for the flower garden banks. She said, because coral reefs are declining all over the globe, when we find ones that are healthy, we want to keep them that way. Drinnen added that they could also provide information that can help other reefs stay healthy or recover from bleaching. In 2010, the flower garden bank's corals were not damaged by the large oil spill that followed the Deepwater Horizon explosion. Other reefs in the Gulf of Mexico were. So researchers are using data from the reef to help guide the restoration of the damaged ones. Researchers are also comparing the genetics of flower garden banks corals to corals in other parts of the world, and they hope to grow and possibly replant them in other places. I'm Dan Friedel.
People around the world have many kinds of pets. Common pets include cats and dogs. Less common pets might include snakes and guinea pigs. Pets differ not only by what kind of animal they are, but by their breed, size, color, behavior, age, and where they came from. In today's Everyday Grammar, we will consider how to describe pets by using adjectives and learn a little about the order of adjectives modifying a noun. It is easiest to describe a pet's physical appearance. You can describe its color, size, and shape. You can describe details like the feel of its fur or scales. You can also describe your pet's age. Age can be described in detail by days, weeks, months, or years. You can also describe your pet's age generally by using adjectives like young, old, adult, or senior. And lastly, you can describe your pet's behavior and personality with opinion adjectives. Opinion adjectives describe what we think or feel about something. Adjectives like beautiful, smart, and funny are all opinion adjectives. Opinion adjectives are just one category of adjectives. There are many different categories. What some English learners might not know is the order of these categories is important when two or more adjectives from different categories are used to describe a noun. The order of the adjective categories is as follows. 1. Quantity. Quantity adjectives describe the amount of something. 2. Opinion. Opinion adjectives describe what someone thinks about something, that person's opinion. 3. Size. Size adjectives describe how big or small something is. 4. Age. Age adjectives are used to describe the age of something. You can use specific numbers or more general words. Sometimes American English speakers put age adjectives before opinion adjectives. 5. Shape or length. These adjectives describe the form and size of something. You can use specific shapes like a triangle or square, or length words like long or short. 6. Color. Color is a great way to describe animals, as they come in many different colors. 7. Origin. These adjectives describe where something or someone came from. For pets, breed is a common term used to describe origin. 8. Material. These adjectives describe the substance that things are made of. Often these adjectives come from the nouns they describe. 9. Purpose. Purpose adjectives are just that. They describe purpose or how something works. Let's describe my cat, Sooty Chai, and see what category of adjectives I use. Sooty Chai is a large 4-year-old Siamese cat. He has big blue eyes. He also has a cute little white spot on his belly. In the first sentence, we have the adjectives large, 4-year-old, and Siamese. Large is in the size category. It comes before 4-year-old, which describes his age. And lastly, we have Siamese. Siamese is a breed of cat and describes its origin. Siamese cats are believed to have come from the country of Siam. Today, English speakers call it Thailand. In the second sentence, there are the adjectives big and blue to describe his eyes. Size adjectives come before color adjectives. And in the last sentence, we have the opinion adjective cute that comes before the size adjective little. And little comes before the color adjective of white. Today, we looked at how we can describe our pets and the order of the adjectives we use to describe them. You can use adjectives for size, shape, or color to describe their appearance. You can also use age and opinion adjectives in either order in American English. Lastly, if you know your animal's breed or where they are from, you can use origin adjectives to describe them. Now it is your turn. Using the order of adjectives, describe your pet. Share your description in an email to learningenglish@voanews.com. I'm Faith Perlow.
I'm Dan Friedel, and you're listening to the Learning English Podcast. You just heard Faith Perlow present this week's Everyday Grammar Story. Welcome back to the show, Faith.
Thanks, Dan. It's great to be here with you. This week, I wrote about describing pets using adjectives. I shared with our audience that there are different categories of adjectives, and a certain order we use when we describe something using multiple adjective categories. So, Dan, I know that you have a dog, but I can't remember much about her. Do you want to describe her?
Faith, I don't know if there are enough words to describe this little dog, Bernie. We got her almost 1 year ago, and she's taken up a lot of our energy. She is brown, small, funny, with a lot of personality, and she makes a lot of noise when she wants something. She's also smart because she learns quickly.
Those are some great adjectives to describe Bernie, but remember the order of adjectives, Dan. Opinion adjectives first, then size, then color.
Okay, I get it. So I should go like this. Bernie is a funny, small, brown dog. She is also smart.
Yes. So she is a smart and funny small brown dog. Has she done anything recently that is funny or shows how she's smart? I know that dogs get into a lot of trouble sometimes.
She gets into trouble all the time. And she recently left our yard, and I got scared that she was out in the neighborhood at night. But I went to one of the other doors on our home and looked out the window, and she was there. So I opened the door and I said, "Hey, Bernie, come on inside." She wasn't facing me. So when she turned around, I saw that she had a big fat squirrel in her mouth. And I just about fell over. I was so surprised.
Oh, my goodness. Did she drop it?
She did drop it. I was worried that it might be alive, and then she was going to bring it into the house, and my wife and I would be chasing a squirrel and a dog around the house all night. But thankfully, that's not what happened.
And that is why my cat, Sooty, does not go outside. I think that he would probably do that because he loves watching squirrels from the window. And he loves going outside, so I think if we combine the two of them, that would not be a good situation for the squirrel.
Do you have any other pets, Faith?
Oh, I do. I have two female guinea pigs. So I have a predator in my house, my cat, and I have some prey. The first one is Nina. She is a fiery little two-year-old pig. She has long black and white fur, and kind of like your dog, she's very smart and very vocal. Guinea pigs actually talk a lot, so yeah, she's pretty smart and she's pretty talkative. My other guinea pig is Niblets. She is Nina's sister. She is a large, smooth-coated guinea pig, and Niblets is a very round and black, white, and brown pig. She isn't as smart as Nina, but she's very sweet and calm.
I see that you used a quantity adjective first to describe your guinea pigs. You have two of them. Then you describe Nina first with an opinion adjective, fiery, which means intense, and she draws people toward her. Then you have the size adjective, little. Lastly, you also describe her age. And for Niblets, you describe her size and then her coat or fur, which is a material adjective. So you said smooth-coated.
And exactly, Dan.
You also said round. You also said round, which I thought was cute.
She's very round. She's a lot fatter than Nina. Nina's just a small little pig, but Niblets is actually a normal size. She's just very round. So I'm assuming she eats more than Nina or steals Nina's food.
Well, Faith, it's fun learning about adjectives and our pets. Thanks for talking with us about your guinea pigs. And thanks for giving our audience some more insight into adjectives.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
Serena Williams and Ruby Bridges will be inducted into the National Women's Hall of Fame in March of next year. The American organization in Seneca Falls, New York, made the announcement Thursday. The tennis great and the civil rights leader were added to a list to be honored during Women's History Month in March. The 2024 inductee class has broken barriers, challenged the status quo, and left an impact on history, the Hall of Fame said in its announcement. Eight other honorees were announced in the spring. Williams & Bridges became available after the ceremony plans changed, a spokesman said. The 42-year-old Williams has won major events in tennis, called Grand Slam events, 23 times. She holds the record for the longest ranking as the top competitor. She retired from tennis last year. Earlier this month, Williams became the first athlete to win the Fashion Icon Award from the Council of Fashion Designers of America. The 69-year-old Bridges was 6 years old when she became the first Black student at a Louisiana public school where non-whites had been barred. The event took place in 1960. In 1963, painter Norman Rockwell recreated the scene in his painting, The Problem We All Live With. Bridges established the Ruby Bridges Foundation in 1999. It offers educational programs and resources to guide and support younger generations toward a peaceful future. Others to be inducted include Peggy McIntosh, an activist known for her explorations of privilege, Kimberly Crenshaw, who helped develop the academic idea called critical race theory, and Judith Plasko, considered by some people as the first Jewish feminist theologian, for criticizing the lack of female ideas in Jewish history. The founder of the National Center for Human Rights Education in Atlanta, Loretta Ross, will also be inducted. So will Alukere Roseanne Sandy Stone, a transgender woman born in 1936 and considered a founder of transgender studies in college. Three women will be inducted posthumously. Dr. Patricia Bath was an early leader of laser eye operations and the first Black woman doctor to receive a medical patent. Dr. Anna Wessels Williams made a disease discovery that led to a treatment for diphtheria. And Eloise Pepion Coble, known as Yellow Bird Woman, started the first bank established by a Native American tribe on a reservation in Browning, Montana. For the first time, the induction ceremony will be broadcast nationally in prime time from New York City, the Hall of Fame said. The past 30 ceremonies have taken place in places around Seneca Falls, New York. The town was the site of the first Women's Rights Convention and is home to the National Women's Hall of Fame. The 2024 class of inductees are scientists, activists, performers, and athletes who are change makers of today and inspiration for the women of tomorrow, said National Women's Hall of Fame Chief Jennifer Gabriel. The American public nominates women to be considered for the Hall of Fame. A group of experts examines those nominations and makes the final decision. I'm Katie Weaver.
And that's the Learning English podcast for today. Thank you, Katie, for that report about those inspirational people. And thanks to my VOA colleagues for their work on today's program.
Most importantly, thank you for listening. For more, visit our website at learningenglish.com. www.voanews.com. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Dan Friedell.